You're listening to Talking Language, where two old friends talk about everything language.
From accents to word origins.
From lost languages to modern languages.
And why the language we speak affects the way we look at the world.
With your hosts,
Robert Ayudi
and Rachel Zirkel.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Talking Language. I'm here with Robert. How you doing, Robert?
Hi, I'm good. Vaccinated.
Yay, me too. I mean, halfway there.
Yeah. Well, but the effectiveness is really high even after the first one, so that's good.
That is good. And you know, when, I don't know what your experience was like, I'm curious to hear about it, but I was hearing horror stories about people going to get vaccinated and spending hours and hours and hours online, and then, you know, come to find out somebody runs out and says, we don't have any more, everybody go home. Yeah. I was nervous that's what was going to happen to me, but luckily, I literally spent 20 minutes at this facility. I walked in, we had people, members of the Air Force checking everyone in their uniforms. They moved everyone through to this huge gymnasium. It was at a local college here in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I got vaccinated. I waited for 15 minutes to make sure there were no side effects, and I left. I was there for about 20 minutes. It was a great process. What was yours like?
Same. So I just want to do a shout out because Carol, she's a listener. I know she's a friend of mine here in Brantford, Connecticut, and she loves, I'm not going to say her last name, but Carol. Hey, Carol.
So hey, Carol.
Carol's cousin said, so on the Monday when it was 55 and older could get the shot, Carol wrote to me and said, or she texted me and she said, my cousin just got one at Fairhaven Community Health Center. And I was like, oh, and she said, call this number. So I called, it took me half an hour. I was scheduled for that Wednesday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I went there. There were the National Guard. There were people from the health center at a high school gymnasium. I was third in line, got my shot, was fine.
Awesome. And did you have any side effects? I had a little bit of a sore arm, but that's it.
I was tired, badly tired for 2 or 3 days. And but who cares? I didn't have, you know, my thing was always all the chesty stuff. I didn't want to have bad lungs. So I wanted to. So anyway, so all's good.
Woo-hoo. Better to have a few vaccine side effects than COVID itself.
Oh, completely. Completely.
Awesome.
Completely. Yep.
Great. Well, it feels like things are on the up and up. I mean, the weather is like teasing us, wants to get better, wants to change. And hopefully by this summer, we can be sort of back to relatively normal state. Yep. So exciting.
I know it is. Yay.
Let's get into our word of the day. Today, we're going to be talking about the word forensic. Mm-hmm. So Robert, tell me a little bit more about this word and how it pertains to what we might be talking about today.
So, it's interesting. It really doesn't necessarily, focus on what we're talking about today, but it's it's okay. It's a really cool word. Well, it does in a sense, but, it's really a great word in terms of linguistics because forensics, you hear a lot about. You know, it's basically about the application of science to investigations of crime. So, you watch all the different shows that are on. It's, the Bloodstains, all that stuff. But there's
my favorite show ever is Forensic Files.
Well, there you go. So forensic, but what we wanted to talk about just briefly was forensic linguistics, which is really cool because there's some really cool things that happen with linguistics when there's a crime that happens. A good example is the Unabomber. I just thought of this. The Unabomber, they could tell a lot by his patterns of how he wrote. Mm. They knew he was very educated. They had a lot of profile from the way he wrote. And that's kind of what forensics linguistics is. Another good example, and of course, none of the names I'm not going to mention or the gender of the person, but there was an agency in New York City where someone had written some very bad emails to one of the employees, and they were threatening to kill them and all this other stuff. And basically, the forensic linguistic people went in and they determined that the person who had written those notes had been, that English was not their first language, and that they had a high degree of education, which is interesting. And I'm sure you've seen people who are not native English speakers, when they do get a lot of education, they almost overspeak sometimes. That
they speak better than we do.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So the apparently the emails had some of that, but then they also had some mistakes that a Native American English speaker would not have made because they were too formal.
Mm.
So they zeroed in on three people and then they found the person.
Wow.
So that's kind of what forensics in linguistics is. And there's some really cool stories. You know, if anybody who listens wants to read that, just type in forensic linguistics and you'll read some really, really cool whodunits and how they found out using language. Yeah, very cool.
Wow, that is super interesting. Do you watch Forensic Files?
No, I don't like any of those shows.
Oh. Yeah, you know, they are a little bit like stomach turning, cool.
Yeah.
But they are so fascinating. And
no, they are. And a lot of them are based on real data. So, but again, you know, just look up forensic linguistics and you find some really cool whodunits and how they figured out who the person was through the spoken word, through the, I mean, if you're a criminal, don't write or speak anything because they'll figure it out.
It will get traced back to you.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
So today's topic is going to be all about pidgin languages mm-hmm. and kind of how they're formed and, you know, how they grow into something else. Mm-hmm. So yep. I just wanted to ask you, what is the story behind the word pidgin? And then what are some examples of pidgin language?
Sure. So it has nothing to do with the bird.
Spelled differently.
It's spelled differently. And it really is pronounced differently. Pidgin versus pidgin. Maybe that's a little too close, but the word pidgin, the bird, it really comes from Latin. And it comes from the word to peep. you know, so the pigeons peep, they make a noise, and that's where they think the origin of the word pidgin comes from. But pidgin, P-I-D-G-I-N, is actually so interesting. Based on, it comes from some Chinese dialects. And the key to understanding about pidgin languages is that they were, and still are in some ways, used for trade. Mm. So you're an English sailor and you've sailed all the way to Hong Kong, and then you want to go up to Shanghai because you hear they have really good silks or something. And so how does one speak to a native Shanghainese if you're an English speaker? I mean, there was no Google Translate, there were no translation applications, and there were very, very, very few people who spoke both languages. I mean, that was not going on in a big way, 18th, 19th century. You know, eventually, of course, it did happen. But again, you know, you're an English trader and you want to go to Shanghai. So what the word in Chinese is comes out as yang jingping, which means, so jingping, which is basically speaking a, it's a Chinese version of pidgin. So they'll say, you know, he's trying to speak a little Chinese, a little English, you know, a little mixture. And they would say, you know, yang jingping, and it actually means foreign. Yang means foreign, and then jingping would be the mix of the
and,
language.
And jingping or pingjing, that kind of sounds like pidgin.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So, right. Exactly. Exactly. So the English heard them say it, and they said, "Oh, you know," and after, you know, whatever, 10 years, whatever, all of a sudden the English were starting to say the word pidgin because they were trying to mimic what the Chinese were saying. And so that was where the word comes from. And then, of course, there's many, many, many versions of the word pidgin from a linguistic perspective or from a daily language perspective. So one of the words is patois. So the patois of a particular country. You hear people in Haiti talk about their patois. You also hear the word Creole. You also basically the same thing as pidgin. And what's really important in this sense is this was not about trade. This was about colonization and sadly slavery. So
right.
Yeah. So the words that you have that indicate pidgin and pidgin languages in the Western Hemisphere, well, actually, in really throughout the world, were really about slavery. So one people. So for instance, you know, West Africans who were taken into slavery and brought over to the West, the North America, South America, they obviously spoke languages. They were taken by people who didn't speak their language, and then they were amongst people who didn't speak their language. And what happened was this clash of two languages all of a sudden developed something that they could speak, that they could mutually understand each other, and that's where the word pidgin started to come into use.
So are there different, so pidgin, patois, creole, those aren't all exactly the same thing. And what would be the differences between those three?
So pidgin is usually used for trade. Patois is usually a dialect, or, you know, a sort of dialect like Haitian Creole is sometimes I've heard it referred to as a patois, because patois is a French word, and, you know, the French colonized and enslaved Haiti. And so the word Creole actually comes from Spanish, criollo, which is essentially the original word came from the word to create, crear, in Spanish, crear. And what it distinguished was between people who were local and born locally in the colonies versus people who were not from the colonies, who weren't born locally. And then, but then in the Brazilian, Portuguese Brazilian situation, it really started to mean someone who was black versus white. And that was, you know, obviously a colonial slave kind of situation
right
there. But then the word itself, Creole, really comes into the modern times as meaning a language that's a mix of other languages. So there's a Creole in Brazil, a Creole in Haiti. There's Creoles all over the world, really, not just based on English. There's many that are based on English, Jamaican, we'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, Creole right now sort of means same thing as pidgin, meaning it's a mix.
I had two kind of follow-up questions. So first one is, let's talk about, or can you tell me more about the grammar of a pidgin language or a patois language?
Yeah, the answer is really simple, because it's simple. So the thing that characterizes a pidgin or creole is the simplicity. So you no longer have the real complicated constructs of a particular language like English. I mean, you know, you can imagine what the English sounded like as they were coming over with, you know, ships and Jamaica and all the Caribbean stuff. And, you know, it was difficult for obviously people who weren't from there to understand them. And so essentially, you know, simplicity was the rule.
Which makes sense, because it seems like this is a utilitarian language. You're using it to get things done. You aren't using it to express abstract ideas or concepts.
Yes. One of the other things that's a little bit related and sort of is in China and in the trades area of China, Greater China, meaning Northern China, Southern China, Southeast Asia, Singapore, Malaysia, there's a way to, with your fingers, there's a way to do numbers. And that's a similar thing that happened during the colonial times, that when the people didn't speak the language, they could at least know what numbers people were talking about. And there's sort of hand gestures in Chinese, which is a similar thing, you know, because when you're trading something, whatever happens between you and the trader, the bottom line is how much something costs. And so they would use numbers with their fingers. So that was kind of a...
So not numbers as in like holding up one finger for one and two, you're talking about big numbers, like thousands or...
Yeah, you can do, yes, you can do the, yep, but it does start off with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And right.
Yeah, but they're a little bit different than what you would think. They start off similar to what we do, and then they get a little weird.
Complex. My other question was about going forward into the future, because we love talking about the future of languages.
Sure.
Because of things like Google Translate and the internet in general and, you know, language courses you can just download onto your phone and start learning phrases. Mm-hmm. Do you think there is a necessity, because the pidgin, patois, creole, these come out of necessity for needing to communicate quickly.
Sure. Yep.
Do you think languages like this are going to keep forming in the future, or do you think that's going to be less, there's going to be less need?
I think absolutely. I mean, I talk to a couple different groups on a regular basis through Zoom, you know, during COVID, it's been really fun. I mean, I have a group that's all over the world, literally. And what develops is a certain way we speak in the group. A lot of them are not native English speakers. They like me to be there because I am a native English speaker, and it's just something to do at night. And they're all really awesome people. It's so cool. I mean, there's a guy from Afghanistan, a guy from Pakistan, a guy from Persia, Iran. You know, we do have a group speak. There's a certain group speak that develops. And that's very, very human, where when you're in a group of people and you're in a subset of a group of people, and that's really what we're talking about here today, is there's a tendency to start to use the same things. Think of your family. Think of your family. A good example is, think of how you speak to your family and think of the words that you used when you were younger and how they changed as you got older. It's really a subset of what we're talking about today.
Definitely. Yeah. Do you have any examples? I'm so curious. What would your group speak examples be?
Okay. Well, actually, the first thing, your family example is awesome. A really good example, because your parents were from Texas, but you grew up in Colorado. So with some accent things, you I've heard those, you know, from you. Also certain ways you pronounce words, and also certain terms that you use that, you know, people in New England, the Northeast, New York might not use it the same way. It's really exactly what I'm talking about, that when there are subsets of groups of people, things tend to want to be simpler, especially if you don't speak the same language. So in the group that I work with, I really make my language very simple. You know, I try not to use a lot of fancy words. And if I do, I try to put them up on the chat board so they know what I'm talking about. Mm. But I can, you know, one of the words that I laugh about all the time is that all the guys use the word bro.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So guys from Afghanistan are saying, "Hey bro, how you doing?" It's hilarious. Right.
That's totally, that's pop culture seeping in.
It is.
Everyone says bro now.
Everyone says bro now. But even a guy in Afghanistan whose English is not his first language, but he's so hell-bent on learning it, you know.
Is using the colloquial, you know.
Yeah.
Like exactly. Friendly jargon.
Right. So that's those same forces were in China during the 19th century of trade, and the same forces that were in colonial Caribbean, colonial Brazil, colonial America, all those things were happening. And so it's very similar in terms of the forces that make that happen. You know, they can be as small as a family. They can be as large as a huge trading situation, like you see with the British and the Spanish and the Portuguese going to Asia.
I want to do some more digging on that, you know, just personally, because I feel like there's got to be somewhere there's a new language kind of cropping up out of necessity, sort of a pidgin language.
Yeah.
Where they're, because you kind of are combining the two languages into like this melting pot sort of language, so that you kind of are learning what I speak, but I'm also using words that you use so that we can understand each other, and, you know, really fascinating.
You see it in high tech, you see it in marketing, international marketing. You know, I did a lot of international marketing and sales with Europe, and I would, there would be a group speak that would come about. There would be words that we would use that we would understand what we meant. I'm trying to think if there's any real movement in the world. I'll have to think about that. I can't think of anything offhand, but as something as big as sort of the British trade to Asia, or, you know,
or the slave trade, or.
So yeah, I can't think of anything big, yeah. But, you know, related to what we talked about last week, you know, English is obviously, you know, in the forefront of a lot of people's mind as a language to learn to advance in their countries. And from that come some really interesting words. And if anybody has any out there that they know, please.
Yeah.
Let us know, because that'd be so fun to listen to them. So I just had some examples I wanted to go through.
Yes, I was going to ask, what are some examples of some.
There was definitely a Creole that happened with French and Vietnam. And
right, a lot of Vietnamese people migrated to France.
Well, France ran Vietnam for, I'm not sure how many years, but for a very long time.
Right, France ran Vietnam. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah. So, but there's also,
I feel like I know a few Vietnamese, you know, people that were born in France, but their parents are from Vietnam, and, you know.
No, well, you mentioned something that's really interesting, because when the French colonized Vietnam, there was a Quechua that developed, of course, and you and we hear words like banh mi, which is the sandwich, the Vietnamese sandwich, which
and
is
what is the yeah go ahead
pain de mi. So pain de mi is a bread, like a roll in French, and banh mi is sort of the Vietnamese version of that.
Pho,
whatever you want to, however you want to say it, the
it's
noodles.
So funny we're talking about that today, because last night my husband ordered a Vietnamese sandwich, and it was on it's on a baguette, you know.
That's right. Yep.
And I never I always have loved Vietnamese sandwiches, and now I'm putting together that it's on a baguette because it's French.
Yes, exactly. Yep. The French colonized not only with their language, but also with their food. So the word pho or pho, you know, pho, which is the noodle soup, that comes from the word for stew or pot stew in French, which is pot au feu. So feu means fire, pot au feu means pot on the fire. And so the Vietnamese took feu and made feu, meaning this big bowl of boiling soup with noodles in it.
Oh my goodness, how cool is that?
Yeah, so that's an example of kind of what happens when two cultures, you know, and in all these examples, the Jamaican example, the Vietnamese example, there were definitely, you know, large vocabularies of words that went back and forth between French and Vietnamese speakers, because you can imagine there probably weren't a lot of people who spoke both languages, and certainly the popular people, the everyday Joe on the street didn't speak French when the French took over Vietnam.
Right, and the common man.
So exactly. It also happened here in North America, which is really, some would say very sad, but you know, sadly or gladly, whatever you want to say, it happened where the British came and, you know, colonized
the native peoples.
Right. This also happened in South America with Spanish and Portuguese, but there's a lot of words that we use in common speech now, that probably started off as a pidgin or as a Creole, you know, word that was used initially for when the two groups of people were trying to talk together. And some of them we used very often, like, my list is actually words that also came from Spanish, and from Mexican native languages. So avocado is one, from,
from
Nahuatl. Yeah. The original Aztec language. Barbecue is from Taino, which is the language of native Puerto Ricans and some of the other islands that are around Puerto Rico. Chocolatl was from Nahuatl too, from Mexico. Chipmunk is from Algonquin, which is actually from my area, Connecticut.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
One of my favorite words ever is Algonquin. I just love Algonquin. It just, what a cool sounding name. Yeah. I just love it.
Yeah, and that was the name of the group that was here in Connecticut. Also in other parts of, I think, New York State as well, where the Algonquin Nation at one point was probably Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and part of New York.
New Hampshire, I think, as well.
Probably, yeah.
I think.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, I'm coughing. Here's also a word, a Mayan word for cigar, sicar. So the Mayans probably smoked tobacco in big stogie form, and they and the Spanish word sicar, and then there's all so many of them: iguana, hurricane, jaguar, opossum, persimmon is a Cree word, which is the Cree language is spoken more in the West than in New England.
A question. Sure. Okay, persimmon. Mm-hmm. What is that?
It's a fruit. Delicious.
Is it good?
It's so delicious. You know what to do? Just a little recipe here.
Yeah, tell me.
Persimmons come to Chinatown because they're usually, you usually find them in Chinatown.
They kind of look like cuties, right? Like little orange cuties.
Yes. The best way I ate them, and I think it was Martha Stewart who I saw, I read this, you freeze them. And then, and then when you unfreeze them, you open them up, and it's almost like this very tasty sherbet.
Like
kind of citrusy, sherbety taste. They're delicious.
Oh, yum. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah. I used to buy them when I was in the city. I used to buy them all the time because they were around, and I always threw them in the freezer.
Have you ever had a kumquat?
Yes.
I've never had one.
Yeah.
That name always makes me laugh. Kumquat.
Yeah, that's from Chinese. That's the Chinese word.
Okay.
Yep. I forget what it is, but maybe next week we can talk about words that come from Chinese. but yeah, they're a little sour, but they're great for making different kinds of sauces, you know.
Oh, interesting.
Like tamarind, you know, tamarind's another one that's very sour, but when you put it into a sauce, it makes Indonesian food and Thai food just zowie. Delicious.
Zowie. Well, I know I got a little off topic, but I was just so, I don't really know what a persimmon is. And then the word kumquat came to mind as well.
But really, these words come from what we were talking about, you know, the mix of two cultures.
Right.
And, you know, it's so interesting when you think about it, because just imagine you're on a boat, you've just left Portugal and you're on your way to the west part of Africa, and you meet people and you can't speak anything. You can't speak to them at all. You speak Portuguese, they speak Yoruba or Tri or some of the languages from West Africa. And how in the world could you communicate? Now, I don't know if
you start to form your own language with each other.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience of meeting somebody who could not speak your language and vice versa, but it's pretty interesting. It doesn't happen a lot these days, you know,
because it doesn't.
Yeah, so many people who travel, especially to New York, they're going to speak English.
Right.
Much to my chagrin, I wish they would all not speak English, because it'd be fun to use all of my languages and your languages that we know. But but basically, you know, it doesn't really happen much these days. I mean, every once in a while you hear about someone finding a new tribe in the Amazon or someone in Papua New Guinea. But, you know, that's really few and far between, you know, but it's really cool to imagine what would happen if you did get into a boat, you leave England, and all of a sudden you find yourself in what's the future of Massachusetts, and you meet Algonquins.
And what would come of, what sort of language would come of you trying to speak with them and them trying to speak with you?
Yeah.
That's what's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. Exactly. And that's really what pidgin is all about, you know,
right?
Just like the English traders trying to talk to the Shanghainese in the day. How do we speak to them? And well, we figured it out. We made a very simple way of communicating with them. And then of course, everyone.
To get business done.
Business done. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk to you all next week.
Yeah.
I'm hoping 1 week, because I'm taking German lessons with you, I would really love to like ask you all my German language questions in an episode.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe people will find that interesting. I don't know. You tell us. Get you know, write us a letter.
German has an awesome history, and yeah, German's a very cool language to understand and learn from its origins through its modern usage now. You know,
right. Yeah, awesome.
And, you know, it's not where English comes from, because English and German came from a root language. We share a common ancestor, but it is
a lot of similarities.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. When you are a native speaker of English, German is a little bit easier to learn.
Awesome. Well, don't forget to rate and subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening. The more ratings we get, the more people can find out about us. And we want to get the word out about talking language. So share it with your friends, rate, subscribe, and we will see you or hear you or not see you or read you. However we'll communicate.
The day of radio.
Next week.
Right, exactly. Anyway, this was fun.
Signing off.
Okay, guys. Bye-bye.